Harper B. from the Minnesota area.
Good evening, family. My name is Harper B., and I am a grateful addict. And I could never do this without first and foremost thanking God for the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And I always got to thank the program of Narcotics Anonymous for one promise, and that's freedom from active addiction. And I always got to say that because that's something that eluded me for a long, long time. So, wow. I don't know if this is the Apollo, because that's what I feel like, you know, like somebody get ready to dance over here, but I ain't worried about that. Like I just shared with William, you know, I get the opportunity, you know, by the grace of God to do this 10, 15 times a year. So I don't think this is no different than any other place I've been, because one thing I know, if you suffer from the same disease that I suffer from, like I ain't trying to impress you. Like I'm here to just try to carry my experience, strength, and hope. And if I'm lucky, I'ma nail this topic. Now, I said that. I like to thank the committee, for real, for asking me, taking a risk on me to ask me to come out, share my experience, strength, and hope. And it's a lot of things that we hear around here over and over, and they sound like it's script, right? But I always gotta share that piece because I remember at the end of the road that didn't nobody wanna hear shit that I had to say. So, you know, I was just talking to William outside earlier, and I remember the end of the road like it was yesterday, because 9 years ago today, I was in the county jail, Douglas County Correctional Center in Omaha, Nebraska, with 31 days clean, saying that I ain't never, ever gonna find myself in that state again. I'm talking about the degradation, the hopelessness, the helplessness, but the worst feeling of all was the desperation. Because just like Harold P. just gave it to y'all, when I got out, I didn't know what I was going to do. So, you know, I was a trustee with a free phone. I say that to say this. I was a trustee with a free phone, and they used to say, hey, Slim, you can use the phone. And, you know, I had the mask on, and I said, man, I'm a soldier. I don't want to use the phone. I don't have to use the phone. I could do this by myself. And the whole real, the reality of that today was like, I didn't have nobody to call anyway, because I had burnt all my bridges. I'm talking about being at home. I'm talking about where I was born and raised. So, you know, just to let you know who I am, I'm really originally, I'm going to tell y'all now before I tell you, right? They got black people there, right? Second of all, if they sell gas and cigarettes, and liquor, because alcohol is a drug, they got dope there too. So, and if I'm from Omaha, Nebraska, the middle of America, right? And there's a whole lot of black people in Nebraska, and if you really want to find out, just go to any one of the penitentiaries and you'll see a whole bunch of them. And if you ain't been to the penitentiary, understand you fucking with a penitentiary disease. So, for real, because it's my story, you know. So I'm from Omaha. I live in Minneapolis. You know, I lived in five cities. Yeah, I lived in your city too, Chris, and I set up shop. So anyway, you know, I'm the middle child. I come from, you know, our share might, part of our share might change, but our story don't change. But part of my share changed because where I'm at in the step working process. So I used to say that I came from a dysfunctional family, but really I came from a good family. I came from a good place. My mom and dad just didn't kick it off. My mom was from the projects and my dad was from a bougie family. So by the time I was 9 years old, I got an older sister and a younger sister. By the time I was 9 years old, my dad and my mom separated for the last time. They had broke up a couple times previous to that. And you know, my mom was an assistant principal at a middle school. And my dad was one of us, but I didn't know that at the time. So anyway, I know some of you in here is older than me, so you understand that corporal punishment used to be a part of the school system. And on the weekends, me and my two sisters used to spend the night with my dad and his parents, and we didn't have cable, all that stuff. We used to go to the movies every Sunday night. And my mom was a real strong disciplinarian. So she was assistant principal, and I know some of y'all might can identify. Like, if you got in trouble at school, then you go to the office, you get five whacks with the paddle, or you go back to class, or if you don't want to get hit with the paddle, you go home, probably get beat to death and got to come back to school anyway. Anyway, I say all that because the paddle lived at my house. So my mom used to tax me, the paddle, the extension cord, the Hot Wheel track, the go-go boot, anything she could get her hand on. I'm talking about my personality being fractured at an early age. I'm talking about fear, because the only thing that I feared as a child was my mama. But my mama was like a six-footer, and she come from the projects, and I heard some stories about her. She used to put them on a couple of them cats, you know what I'm saying? But anyway, you know, me and my sisters, we standing in front of the store, the movie theater to go in, and my mom drive by, and she stopped, and she said, "When y'all get home, your ass is mine." And I can't remember to this day, you know, what we had did. But when I got back to my grandparents' house, because my dad was my hero, you know, he was he the coolest person I met to this day. May he rest in peace. He was wearing gaiters in the 60s, driving big whips, wearing diamonds, you know what I'm saying? Like I said, at that time, I didn't know he was one of us. May God rest his soul. He died with 22 years of abstinence. You know, but anyway, so when my mom come to pick us up, like my grandmother and them, I told you, they bougie. They got this big old huge house, and I'm hiding in one of the closets. And they get tired of looking for me. Eventually, her and my two sisters leave, right? So I always share that because, you know, as addicts, we tend to make bad decisions. And I ain't confused. That was the first bad decision that I made in my life. But, like, we suffer from something that we can make a bad decision and stay locked in the decision. And I wanted to go back home because, really, my dad worked 3 to 11. And I was with his parents, some old people, you know what I'm saying? There was 3 channels. I got the run of the hood. We lived on the strip. But moving on, like, the reason why I say it's a bad decision because, like, speed the tape up, the summer of 1973, I was 12 years old. My grandfather died. So my mom came to pick me up, and we went to the funeral home to view the body. She brought me back. She dropped me off. Like, 11 days later, never forget it, because it's the coldest day in an addict's life, right? June 8th, 1973. Like, 19 days before I turned 13, my dad now, because I done skipped a lot of stuff. This is a workshop. I ain't telling my story. I'm just trying to get to a point here. My stepmom and my dad called me up on a Friday. The first Friday school was out. I'd never forget it. Remember, like it was yesterday, because it was the coldest day in the addict's life. They called me upstairs. They said, "Beverly died." And I'm talking about Beverly is my mama. And she was only 36 years old. Her inhaler was empty. She died of an asthma attack. So the next time I seen my mama, she was laying in that same funeral home in the same spot that I had seen my grandfather. And I'm talking about like one a squander opportunity in my life based on a bad decision. Because I wanted to go home, but like Harold P. was sharing, it was just something in me that wouldn't let me just, you know, like, hey, please take me back. So I got to stick with some bullshit that I did when I was 9 years old. And what I found out until I surrendered to this process, I let that same 9-year-old boy make a whole lot of decisions for me for a long time. So anyway, it's a Friday night. School just got out. Clay Morgan and them having a house party. And I smoked a joint. And I drink a bottle of Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. For real. And it felt warm inside. And it was fuzzy. And it felt good, right? And I find myself chasing that same feeling in different shapes, fashions, and forms for the next 30 years. try to get to this topic. But I just ain't coming in because y'all can't do me like y'all did the opening speaker. I got to let y'all know something. I got to introduce myself, let you know where I'm coming from, because if you don't understand where I'm coming from, how the hell you going to appreciate where I'm at? I got 9 years, one month, and 2 days clean at this particular time. And I like to back up and say, welcome to the newcomer. You are the most important person at any Narcotics Anonymous meeting. We can only keep what we have by giving it away. You know, to all the people with 10 years or more, I like to say from the bottom of my heart, because I love my predecessors, thanks for standing in the gap while I was out there trying to kill myself. And I found a place to come, and it was alive and well when I got here. I ain't got one of those stories when I came in. I didn't believe y'all was staying clean, man. When I came in this process and I seen y'all, man, it was a relief because I knew I had finally made it on. For real, because I tried a whole lot of things. Like, I got 10 years of how it don't work. Yeah, because I was always able to stop. But the problem was I could never stay stopped. I'm grateful. Richie asked me how was I feeling. Was I ready? And I just said, I'm grateful. Because in the area that I come from, they say a grateful addict won't use, but the same addict still will. And just for today, I ain't trying to be that same addict. So I ain't got a lot of horror stories in recovery. And I applaud y'all with all the horror stories in recovery, because I told you, I tried for 10 years to do it my way, and I always had to come back and pick up a white key tag. So I'm at the end of the road now, because I have been around here, I heard some things. They told me jail time count too. You know, so it was February 28, 2003, because it's a workshop, we're going to skip all that other stuff, you know what I'm saying? I came in here, well, let me back up for a minute so you might understand when I talk about these three motherfuckers who was trying to kill me all my life, right? One of them is Iceburn Slim. The other one is Salam Shabazz. And the other one is 6'8 Slim. So I'm sharing to them, because right now they arrested, but they want to come back out, you know. And that's why I got to become the ultimate weapon, because in my area, one of the most misquoted parts of our literature that the ultimate weapon is another recovering addict. But it don't say that, and we're going to get to that in a minute. So anyway, I had 90 days clean. I lost my job because I flunked the background test. Me and my ex-wife, we was at the casino all night. And I was hitting and I was putting money in my pocket. It's the end of the month. And needed insurance tag for one of our vehicles. So now I'm already got caught up on a fixed idea, because I don't know how to deal with these people letting me go from this job, because I ain't working with nothing. I don't know nothing, but I'm one of them cats, if you could used to say something to me, my response to everything you said was, I know, I know, I know. And I didn't know shit. Because I came in here, man, terminally hit, fatally cool. Misinformed by misinformed people, was misinformed by some more misinformed people with a faulty belief system and a street code of conduct, and all that shit did for me, man, was get me institutionalized. And I was so twisted that I thought I was getting decorated in the game. For real. Because I come from the block. So, when my mom and my dad was stupid enough to let me stay with him, and he worked 3 to 11, I belong to the hood from that point forward. You know, I identified with Harold P. because I used to take money out of my dad's wallet, and he used to ask me, boy, you been in my wallet? No. He didn't beat me, but he quit leaving his money in his wallet. Because I was tearing him off, you know what I'm saying? I didn't know he was nodding on blows. I thought he was just drinking beer, you know. So anyway, I'm caught up on a fixed ideal. So my ex-wife, we done went and picked my daughter up. We back home. We've been at the casino all night. I take my daughter to school every day at this particular time because I was working from 6 at night to 6 in the morning. And I took her to school, dipped in the hood, got a package, came back. Eyes all buck. We've been out all night, and she asked me, was I hungry, and I told her no. So she should have known something was wrong, but I ain't blaming her because it was all on me. So anyway, I go down in the hood. The place to pick up the insurance tab wasn't open. I done took some hits. I'm spooked. I couldn't sit in the car. I went downtown to the high rise. And they do have high rises in Omaha, Nebraska. Check this out, man. And God always give you a way out. So when I get up to this apartment, they got a sign on the door. And it said, do not knock on this door. But I know I got the package, so I knock on the door anyway. I'm talking about everyday gutter dope fiend open the door, and I've got on this nice, beautiful silver jabot and nice boots and everything trimmed up. And she looked at me and she said, oh, no, Slim, you're not using again. And I'm like, came in. I was only going to be there a half hour, right? I don't know if anybody can identify with that. But I end up getting stuck, right? Like Chuck. And the only time I could move was when I got down to one rock. And that was to go get some more and come back. So now I already told you I had already met y'all. And I had already had a clean date in Narcotics Anonymous because I tried both other fellowships. I tried medicine, religion, psychiatry, all that shit that's on that card. I tried it. In the midst of sitting there, man, I had my moment of clarity. Because I had a nice home. My ex-wife was a nurse. I got my daughter. I got all them electronics. I got vehicles and all that. And I knew in that moment that I was putting it all on the Brillo. And I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop to just go home and give her her car, because I had a chip to start my Jeep, and I had the chip in my pocket. And I couldn't do some simple shit like that. I knew it was over. So when I came home that day, and this is a nice piece in our, it works on the hot why and how, where it talks about many of us recall the moment of clarity. Yeah. When we came face to face with our disease, all the lies, all the pretense, all the rationalizations, where we stood at. And it was no longer, it wasn't working no more, because the whole thing, I couldn't go home. I couldn't think of a good lie to tell her. But the reason why I couldn't think of a good lie to tell her, because I couldn't lie to myself no more. We're talking about the first coldest day mama died, second coldest day I can't lie to myself no more. So, of course, I found myself by myself, with myself, no cars, a warrant out, and I have been around here long enough to know, like, I could kill two birds with one stone, because now I done let this monkey loose again, and I couldn't get him in the cage. That was February 28th. My clean date is March 12th. So that's my last run, and I turned myself into the county jail, man, and you know, I'm somewhat, and I ain't no legend in my own mind, because my criminal record don't say that. You know what I'm saying? So when I turned myself into the county jail, man, they was like running around all crazy, like, guess who's turning themselves in? They didn't know, man, because they ain't one of us, man. That was my surrender to this process, for real. So that's where I was. I ended up doing 62 days. I struggled with staying clean one day on this journey, and that was the day they let me out, and I really didn't have nowhere to go. Somehow, I mustered up enough courage to go back up to my ex-wife's house that I had paid the rent for the last four or five times and muscle my way in. It was nice outside. They had the door open. I just bum-rushed the crib. And I just posted up like, you know, I got 62 days clean, baby. I'm back. You know what I'm saying? So on my 77th day clean, right, I wake up at 2 in the morning and the Omaha police is there and they like, Mr. Blackburn, you gotta go. And I'm like, this my house. Look in the closet. I mean, you got to go. So I find myself at 2:30 in the morning with 77 days clean, walking down the street to Omaha with just a glimmer of hope, because I knew about y'all, and I hadn't put one in me. And I ain't had nowhere to go. So I had to make some decisions. And it's funny because I had already lived in Minneapolis for 2 years, and I found the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, and everything was beautiful, and I was dumb enough to chase my ex-wife back home, only for her to put me out several times, you know what I'm saying? And I understand today, it didn't have nothing to do with her, because every time I got put out, it was preceded by some crack cocaine. It always was first. It's funny how they never put you out when you got money. It's always after it's all gone. And most of the time, they knew you was going to do that shit anyway. So anyway, I really didn't have nowhere to go, man. I checked myself into. I say that because I had left the ARC to go to Minnesota. And I had to come back. It's funny, man. Like, I had to come back because first time I left Omaha, like Chris was talking, I left like a runaway slave. And there's a lot of stuff I didn't take care of before I left. Didn't nobody know I left. And, you know, probably was 2 or 3 months before they even realized I left, because I had been done left physically, mentally, and spiritually anyway. So checked into the ARC, man, and I had to get busy right away. I had to get busy right away. And, like, the men that I sponsor, man, I always tell them, really, like, to get into this chapter, to internalize this chapter. Because if you don't really understand why the fuck we here, you ain't gonna really understand how it works. So I just want to read this piece, man. It said, we were searching for the answer when we reached out and found Narcotics Anonymous. We came to our first NA meeting in defeat and didn't know what to expect. After sitting in a meeting or several meetings, we began to feel that people cared and were willing to help. Although our minds told us we would never make it, the people in the fellowship gave us hope, insisting that we could recover. We found out that no matter what our past thoughts or actions were, others felt and done the same. Surrounded by fellow addicts, we realized that we were not alone anymore. Recovery is what happens at our meetings. Our lives are at stake. We found that putting recovery first, the program, works. We face 3 disturbing realizations. I say that, man, because I understand I ain't confused, man. Like, the person who might get the most out of this tonight is me. Because my life is still on the line, man, because I know I could break bad at any given moment. So, like, my recovery gotta come first. Because every time I told you, man, I stopped 16 different times and couldn't stay stopped. Everything that I put in front of my own recovery, like, my clean day changed. Like, today, man, like, I stay clean on my own experience. Like, I keep coming back to see y'all, man, because I suffer with the third part of our message, man. I'm still trying to find a better way to live. Because I already told you, I came in here misinformed with a street code of conduct. Like, going to the county jail and dunking and playing basketball and doing push-ups wasn't no problem for me. Going to the penitentiary, when you ain't scared to go to the penitentiary, something the fuck wrong with you. So we faced 3 disturbing realizations. One, we were powerless over our addiction. I always could admit that part. But because of my faulty belief system and my fractured way of thinking, man, like, I couldn't get the second piece. Because I was stealing y'all shit and taking y'all shit and selling some shit successfully sometime, like I was a player. Like, I really had some roots in the game. And I never could admit the unmanageability part until one day I was really studying the literature, because this ain't no novel. This is a text. This is a study. This is like the roadmap to recovery. So you can't read it once. Like, you gotta study this shit. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say that everything that occurs in the course of NA service must be motivated by the desire to more successfully carry the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. It was for this reason we began this work. We must always remember, always, man, we ain't in competition with each other, man. I ain't getting no Oscar for this shit to come up here and tell y'all how fucked up I did myself. To this crew over here, man, like, man, I got heroes up in this camp, man. Thomas P., William S., George J., man, you know what I'm saying? They talk about the full fruit of the labor of love living the harvest. And it always comes in its right season. So tonight is my turn to bring some experience, strength, and hope to the room. Man, gratitude become the underlying force in everything we do. Man, I thank God for everything. I ain't come up here today to be the sickest addict, to be the one who fucked up the most in recovery. I couldn't fuck up in recovery. I was too scared this time. Because every time I took my will back, my clean day changed. And I ain't perfect, because I understand that perfection is not a destination, it's a journey. So anyway, man, I was reading and it said, like, has your life been ever taken, the management of your life ever been taken over by jails or institutions? And the light came on, another moment of clarity. Like they said, a spiritual experience can't be brought or sold. It can only be given in a way. So I start having spiritual awakenings all through the flick, because when I told you I didn't have nowhere to go, I went into the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. And it told me that they'll take me on a journey that far exceeds my expectations. Like, I wasn't coming here to be no damn NA speaker. I couldn't even talk to my daddy. My daddy used to have me on the couch, and everything he asked me, my answer was, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. And he told me, he said, boy, if you tell me I don't know one more time, I'm going to knock your head off. Now, why did you do this? So I understand today why I'm here, because it's time to man up, man, because the second piece is like how I got myself into this situation. Like it says, although we're not responsible for our disease, we're responsible for our recovery. Like, I don't know, I don't remember what my mom wanted to touch me up for that weekend, but I was very mischievous. You know, I come from a family that had a few things. I could really identify with Harold P, because when I first started lying to my mom, it was out of fear. Like, my ass was on the line. So anyway, this last piece, man, is really, it said, we can no longer blame people, places, and things for our addiction. We must face our problems and our feelings, man. I've been running, that's why I done lived in 5 different cities. Because I've been running from myself. You know, but everywhere I went, I took fear with me. And everywhere I went, it gave me a new opportunity to take advantage of a new group of people. That's how I got 3 different identities. Yeah. I hit Minnesota, I was 6'8 slim. For real, for real. So I was going to try to give you the recovery piece, but I got the 5-minute thing. You know, I'm just saying, man, I'm real grateful, man. I'm real grateful, man, because I don't have a psychiatrist. I don't have a counselor. I don't have a social worker. Like, I'm going to tell you, before I surrendered to this process, shit, all kind of shit used to happen to me. All the time. Always something was happening to me. But since I completely surrendered to this process and got in the step working process, I'm talking about, man, 9 years almost, man, my life has not been interrupted. Because I understand, man, like, when I stay connected, I stay protected. Like, I'm in protective custody today, man. Like, I'm so grateful, man. Like, I just want to say, this is a bucket list weekend for me, right? Like, the first time I seen the Atlantic Ocean. Talk about lost dreams awaken, new possibilities arise. Checkpoint, bucket list. Ocean City, bucket list. Get to kick it with this crew over here again, bucket list. Get the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope at Ocean City. Bucket list, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I for real, man. Like, I once again, man, I can't tell you enough, man, how I thank God for everything. I'm talking about the guy, the same guy, who's walking down the street with 77 days clean, without a pot to piss in, a window to throw it out, When I went back to my wife, my ex-wife, I asked my 8-year-old daughter, who is now 17, give me my watch and my basic text, and that's all I had. Because I understand it's always darkest before dawn. And I already know, man, like, when God is all you have, you'll find out that God is all you need. For real. For real, man. So some things that happened to me, you know, next time y'all can give me a guest slot. Anyway, I'm just joking. I'm just joking, man. I'm just joking, for real. No, because I got some lot of things that's going on currently that I ain't going to be able to touch on. But, you know, I want to really dedicate this CD to the memory of my first sponsor, Reggie G., who died of congestive heart failure on January 19th. I ain't confused that I wouldn't be standing here if he didn't give me the best that he got. Like we said, a spiritual experience can't be bought or sold. It can only be given away. My name's Harper B. Thanks for letting me share.